Okay, this semester one of the topics that we're going to be covering is leadership, and tonight we are going to be dealing with just kind of a general introduction to the whole subject matter of leadership, and then next week we're going to be looking specifically at what a Christian leader is and what he does. And then from there, we are going to take the acrostic poll, which is planning, organizing, leading, and evaluating, and we will be spending 1 week on each one, learning how to plan, learning how to organize, learning how to lead, learning how to evaluate, and then that last lesson will be on how to motivate people, which is a function of leading. But since that is so crucial in this whole area of leadership, we are going to take a special session on that. So those will be the seven lessons that we're going to be covering in this whole area of leadership. Now, oftentimes when we think about leadership, we begin to think about the guy that is called the SNL, the strong natural leader. This man tends to be aggressive, dynamic, he's poised, he seems to know what to do, and is very capable of taking charge because he has abilities that have been given to him by God in this area of what the Bible would call administration. And any time you find one of these individuals, this strong natural leader, and there is no designated leader in a particular group, he will always come to the forefront. And of course, because he tends to have ability and is willing to assume leadership, most of the people will let him have it and will just naturally look to him. But as good as that strong natural leader is, unfortunately, all too quickly, many of them outlive their natural usefulness to the kingdom of God. Because they have these natural gifts and ability and intuitively just seem to know what to do, even though they've never been to a course on leadership or somebody has never trained them, they just know what to do. And because they know what to do, they don't study this area of leadership like other people who don't know what to do and find themselves in places of leadership. They've got to study, but because he knows what to do, he just never bothers to study. And before long, because he is such a capable leader, that work begins to grow and to multiply, but pretty soon it grows beyond their ability. And that which seemed to blossom and flourish now begins to stagnate because that person has never learned the principles of leadership. Now, in a very real way, leadership is a science, but it is also an art. It's a science because there are certain principles that a person must learn if he is going to lead, but it becomes a real art when you have to apply those principles into the life of any particular group that you're leading. And it's one thing, you know, if you just have to lead a group, but if that group has got an objective and you've got to accomplish that objective. And of course, that's one of the things that every leader must do is accomplish objectives. And trying to move and get people to do what needs to be done, it becomes a real art. Now, anyone can learn the principles of leadership and can use those principles in a limited situation. Now, for many of us, to even get started, we simply have to learn the principles because we wouldn't know what to do. But the NSL, he doesn't have to learn the principles because, as I said a moment ago, since it is a natural gift that God has given to him, he just knows instinctively what he should do. But again, it's important that that strong natural leader take the time to learn those principles, because if they learn the principles, then it will just increase their capacity to be able to lead other people. But I said a moment ago that leadership and the principles of leadership can be learned by anyone. And since there is such a drastic need for leaders in the Christian church, that if we ask God to teach us not only the principles, but how to apply those principles, that God will, in fact, do that. Now, what is leadership? And if you go to the Webster Dictionary, it defines leadership as someone who leads. Isn't that profound? And that doesn't do all that much to really give us a working definition. And someone else has defined it this way. They say it's getting things done through the efforts of other people. And that certainly strikes at the very heart of leadership. But for the sake of this course, I would like to define leadership in this way, where I've said that leadership is organizing and activating manpower and resource into the most optimum relationship so as to accomplish the objective. It's organizing, it's activating both manpower and resources in the most favorable relationship so that we accomplish the objective. And so we have the gold, we have manpower, and we have resources, and we have a responsibility for all of those, and a good leader can take and translate those from goals into reality. And he does that by taking the manpower and the resources and blending them together in the most harmonious relationship so that they, in fact, accomplish the objective. Now, what are the responsibilities of leadership? And again, I take this from, you know, more a secular point of view, but even if you are a leader in the Christian church, you're still responsible for these same things. And the first thing that any leader is responsible for is the accomplishing of the objectives. That is his prime responsibility. And if he is the greatest guy in all the world and everybody just loves him, but he doesn't accomplish the objective, he's failed. And sometimes everybody doesn't love the leader, and they do get the job done. But in terms of the popularity contest, they lost. And one of his things that he has got to do is not only accomplish the objective, but he must do it in a way that he does not turn the people off who follow him. Now, this is in relationship to that second point, because his second responsibility is maximizing the satisfaction of his followers. And so every leader has a responsibility to maintain a certain degree of morale in this group that he leads, because if he makes decisions and is not aware of people's needs, then he ends up creating a stress factor. And when that stress begins to enter into any group, you end up with all kinds of personnel problems, and you know, people no longer care about the objectives, they care more about themselves. And so one of the things that will maximize the satisfaction of people who follow you is that if you make the ownership of the goals that we are trying to accomplish group ownership, then you'll go a long way. But if that person or that group thinks, well, that's his objective and that's all he cares about, it isn't our objective, and he's in for trouble. But if somehow you can rally those people together that this is something that God has called us to do, or our particular group to do, and every one of them has a sense of ownership to that gold, whether it's in the Christian realm or whether it's in the secular realm, that he will go a long way in maximizing the satisfaction of his believers. And then the third thing, he needs to minimize undesirable side effects. Because in that decision-making process, every leader is going to be called upon to make some decisions that will not suit every person. And when he does that, he's in for trouble. But if people know that you love them and you have their best interest at heart, then that will cover a multitude of things. But somehow he has got to make sure that he minimizes those side effects. Now, one of the things that often happens is that on the organizational chart, they are represented by boxes. And if people ever get the idea that you think that they are just a box and you have no real concern for their human needs, I'll tell you, you're going to have all kinds of undesirable side effects that you wished you did not have. And then the next thing he's responsible for is the maximizing of production. So whatever it is that this group is trying to do, the leader is responsible to see that we have maximum production. And in the business world, this may mean some product that you are manufacturing. But in the church, it could be that if I'm responsible for the stewardship committee, that we want to raise X amount of dollars for missions. If I'm the superintendent of Sunday school and we need five teachers, rather than coming up with five teachers, maybe what we need to do is to have eight new teachers so that we've got a surplus rather than just barely covering. Or if I'm in charge of the evangelistic rally, rather than having 25 people to hear the gospel message, that we need to get 300 people to hear the gospel message. And so the leader always needs to be concerned with the maximum production. Now notice that I said production and not the maximum activity, because far too often we are involved in ventures and we get out there and we yell and we scream and we throw dirt in the air and everybody wonders what in the world is going on, but whatever it is, something is happening out there. But then all of the dust eventually settles. And you look out there, and as far as the eye of God can see, there is nothing. Are the people tired? They're tired. They've worked their fingers to the bone. A lot of activity, but no real production. And then a leader is also responsible for the minimum expenditure of resources. That most of the time we work with a budget, and the lower you can keep the budget, the better everyone is going to like it. And that means that we need to find new ways to do things, and ways that are perhaps cheaper and not more expensive. And with that comes what is often called as the cost results ratio. I remember a few years ago, a man came to Singapore, and he was a Christian, and he was interested in the mission work that I was doing. And as we drove around the city, and he asked all sorts of questions, he asked me one day, he said, Dave, he said, how much does it cost to keep you out here in the mission field? And so I gave him a figure of whatever my budget was at that particular time. And then he said, now tell me, he said, how many people did you win to Christ last year? And I gave him a figure since we had just had our little evaluation. He reached in and he pulled out his little computer there and punched in his machine. He said, it costs you X amount of dollars for every convert. But he said, and he knew more about Billy Graham than I did at the time, and he said, but that's cheaper than what it cost Billy Graham to make converts. He said, that's a good investment. And I said to him, I said, well, now will you also punch into your little computer there, because we made this many disciples, and we made this many disciple makers, and this many leaders of disciple makers, and we sent 3 missionaries. He said, well, I don't know how to figure that. But he said, it is one terrific investment. So he said, when I get back home, he said, I'll send you $1,000 for your work. And when he got home, rather than to send $1,000, he sent $2,000, and he'd been sending $2,000 every year since. But he was concerned about the minimum expenditure of resources and that cost-results ratio. And then the last thing that leadership is responsible for, I shouldn't say the last thing, but, we go on all night long. And what I'm trying to do is to pick out the big issues that leadership is concerned with. And the last one has to do with the reproduction of leadership. And one of his major roles is to find, develop, and to find, recruit, and to train or develop leadership. Now, in the Old Testament, Moses was faithful to lead the people of Joshua. But Joshua was so busy taking the promised land that at the end of his life, he had not trained a successor. And the book of Deuteronomy ends where it says, every man did that which was right in his own eyes, and for better than 350 years, Israel was without a leader, because he had been so busy that he did not train a leader. And part of our responsibility as leaders is to train other leaders. And of course, the best way to do this is not in a classroom, but in what we call on-the-job training, taking somebody under your wing and carrying them out with you so that they can both see how to do a job, and as you discuss and they ask questions, that they learn how to do this thing. And one of the things that I've often done in the training of young men for places of leadership is, first of all, I just say, hey, why don't you come over here and help me? And his job is just to help. And then when it's all over with, we sit down and we evaluate and learn what we can from that situation. Well, then the next time we do a similar sort of task, I may say to that individual, now listen, what I'd like for you to do on the basis of what we learned last time is to kind of draw up a new war plan for us of what we ought to do. And so I send him off, and he draws up the war plan and brings the thing back, and I look at that thing, and I say, okay, let's try that. And I want you to do it just the way it's laid out, and the only reason you'd need to check with me is if we have to deviate from the plan. But if we can do it this way, let's have a go at it, and you go ahead and just kind of lead out. I'll assume the responsibility, so if anybody gets knocked in the head, why, it'll be me and not you. And so I allow him to draw up the war plans and begin to execute it, still carrying the responsibility on my shoulders. And then at the end of it, we'll take and evaluate it, find out what we can about it. And then the next time that we do it, then I may be willing to delegate. But, we've been through that operation. He's helped me, and then I've been right there at his side, guarding and protecting him as he tries to put this thing into action. Now, there are certain qualities that are essential for leadership. And again, we could have this monstrous list, and I'm going to try and boil it down to what I think are the real essentials. But the first one has to do with vision. And that simply means that that person must know what needs to be done and to have a burden on his heart to do it. And vision is nothing more than the ability to be able to bring into focus that particular job out there and then have a heart to do that job. And far too often you have elected people to places of leadership who had no real vision, and consequently they just don't function very well, nor do the people who are under them. We'd have done better if we found somebody who had a burden for this thing, knew what needed to be done, and the heart to do it. And then the second thing that a person must have is courage. Somebody has very well said that leadership is a very lonely position, because oftentimes you are called upon to make all the hard decisions. And sometimes it takes real courage to make that decision. And sometimes you find people who don't have the courage to make those decisions. And they are forever in trouble because everybody is waiting upon them. But in having courage to make decisions, sometimes that is going to make that person unpopular. And there are some people who just can't live with that being unpopular, and consequently just do not have the courage, and as a result of that, a project begins to get stifled and the morale begins to go down, and a lot of times it's due to this whole business that the person lacks the courage to make the decisions. And if we don't know the decision to make, well, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men freely, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given. So if we don't know what decision, at least we know the place to turn. And then tied with this whole business of courage is this area of decisiveness. That sometimes if a person doesn't have the courage, then he just procrastinates and procrastinates, waiting, hoping somehow that this whole bad scene out here is going to somehow pass away. But problems that are unattended don't go away. They just multiply themselves. And by the time that person makes the decision, oftentimes it's too late. And you just can't redeem the situation. So there not only has to be the courage, but there has to be the decisiveness in making those decisions. And then the next has to do with discipline. And leaders are charged with the responsibility to accomplish objectives. And that means that when decisions are made, they've got to be carried out, and they've got to have enough discipline about themselves to make sure that those things are carried out. And, of course, with that, one of the best ways is to set the pace for those who follow you, that you are a living demonstration or an example that these things have got to be done, and day after day they see you giving yourself to them. Because if the leader falls short and lacks the discipline, I promise you that the followers will not have the discipline to see that those goals are accomplished. And then a leader must have wisdom. And this is a combination of both knowledge and skill. It deals with information as well as experience. One of the things that he's got to have wisdom in is what he can and cannot do. Far too often a person has been successful here, and now they take and they promote them and give them a new job here, And we have lifted that person from operating in terms of their strengths now to where they are operating in terms of their weakness. And we often talk about the Peter principle, where we have promoted a person to his place of incompetence. And sometimes we just have to say, no, I don't want that job. I don't think that I'm called nor suited nor fit for that job. And I'm very happy doing this. I feel that I'm making a contribution. And, I just don't want that job. But not only must he have wisdom about his own abilities, but he also must have wisdom in knowing what needs to be done. And then the best way of doing that. I think of the story of the young man who asked a very old and successful businessman what the secret to his success was. And the man said to him, "My secret for my success is my wise decisions." And he said, "Sir, how do you learn to make wise decisions?" To which the old man replied, "Through the bad decisions that you make." And there is more truth than fiction to that. Unfortunately, some people don't learn from their mistakes. And rather than having 20 years worth of experience, they have 1 year's worth of experience 20 times. Now, sometimes we lack wisdom and we're not sure what to do. But as Christians, the Bible says, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally, and it shall be given. So if we don't know what to do, then one of the resources that we need to avail ourselves is to God. And God may very well lead us to somebody who does have the resources that we need. And just because I am placed in charge of a particular project, I may not have the skill necessary. And the thing that I may have to do is to rely upon the resources that have been given to me. And hopefully among those resources there are some skilled people. And then the next thing is he must have the ability to motivate other people. And one of the best ways to motivate other people is to communicate a genuine enthusiasm for whatever it is that you're responsible to do. But again, setting the pace and working to try and motivate other people to give their time and their resources to the accomplishing of your objective. And then the next that a good leader has got to have a certain amount of executive ability. And if he does not have that executive ability, that either through his ability to lead or his inability not to lead, he will have that thing so fouled up, and he'll either create so much red tape and paperwork with it, or the lack of it, that no one is really quite sure what to do. And one of the responsibilities that every leader has is to make sure that he does develop his ability to plan, to organize, to lead, and to evaluate. Now, with this, I'm going to add to this what I call our grace factors for spiritual leadership. And one of those certainly ought to be patient. I think of the verse in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, where it says, "And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but must be gentle unto all men, apt to teach." He must be gentle. He must not strive. He must be a man of patience. Now, oftentimes, people who are placed in positions of leadership, they end up there because they are the most capable people in all the world. Unfortunately, the people that often follow them have less capabilities. And the leader tends to become just a little impatient with their ability to be able to do this thing which he is a master at. And somehow, he has got to have patience if he is going to be a Christian leader. Because the scripture says that the servant of the Lord must not strive, but must be gentle, apt to teach, and patient. But in the secular realm, some of the most successful people, unfortunately, are some of the most impatient people. And then another grace factor is humility. And in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 and 6, it says, "Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elders, yea, all of you be subject one to another, for God resisteth the proud and gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." Now, unfortunately, many of our best leaders end up being proud and arrogant almost to the point of being prima donnas. And they don't have any humility about them. But again, if we are going to be leaders in the kingdom, there certainly needs to be that quality of humility. And then the next grace factor is tact and diplomacy. And somehow this has got to characterize the lifestyle of every Christian leader. In the secular world, unfortunately, many leaders demand their right, and they do not understand that kindness and love is a very uncostly lubricant that will somehow grease those wheels and make everything move just the way it ought to move. And so some of the people, they're neither patient, they're neither humble, and they certainly lack tact and diplomacy. But for the Christian leader, he needs to have all of those things. Now, I also want us to look here for a moment, because there are basically three kinds of leadership. And you can read all kinds of books about all kinds of styles of leadership, but whenever you look at them very carefully, you realize that there are basically only about three kinds of leadership. And the one that perhaps we're all the most familiar with is that autocratic leader, sometimes called a dictator. And in his leadership, everything centers around the leader. He makes all the decisions and passes them down for the underlings to carry out. He produces obedience at the expense of initiative. And many of us think, well, we just don't need that kind of leadership. But sometimes that kind of leadership is needed, and the place that it functions the best is in a crisis situation, because this is normally a very capable individual. He comes with an iron hand, and he takes control of that situation, and everybody knows that he's in charge, and you better listen to what he says. And it does have its place. Okay, the second thing the second kind has to do with what is called the democratic. And the leadership here ends up being group-centered, that they elect the leader, and the leader better listen to him or to the group, or he's going to find himself on the outside looking in, because they will elect somebody who will listen to them. And the decisions tend to be group-centered. It produces joint cooperation, and oftentimes at the expense of a lot of wasted action to give everybody their 2 cents in the matter. And it is best used to accomplish goals that are the result of group effort. And then the last kind of leadership is what we call free rein or laissez-faire. And the leadership of this is individual of the group centered, that everything functions around a particular individual. Now, this produces initiative, but often at the expense of coordination, because the right hand normally doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and every man is doing that which is right in his own eyes. And this kind of leadership is best for creative and highly skilled individuals. Suppose you put me in charge of, a conference. But then somebody comes along and breaks his leg. And we call upon Sandy to, come here. Well, if I'm the leader and I'm saying, well, now, Sandy, don't do that and don't do this. And man, I don't know beans about broken legs or what ought to be done. At that point, I ought to say, Dr. Bam, you are in charge, and he's going to make the decision, because he is creative and highly skilled and has forgotten more about the subject than I will probably ever learn. And the best thing that I can do, rather than being autocratic or have him function under democratic rule in this situation, is to give him free rein. Now, what I'm trying to say to you is that all three of those are legitimate styles of leadership. And every good leader is going to have to learn how to do all three, even though he may have a natural ability towards one of those. Now, if you were to look at me, which of those would you say I am?
A.
Yeah, I'm A, autocratic. Boy, I'll tell you, through life I've had to learn to be democratic and, in the training of men, free reign. And I don't know what your natural tendency is, but if you're going to be an effective leader, there will be days that you're going to have to develop those other styles, because they all have their place in a good leader. Depending on the situation that he finds himself, will be able to reach down and to pull out the particular style needed for that situation. Now, in kicking this lecture off, I said that there are certain principles that are associated with leadership, because it is a science. Now, in the first semester, we learned one of those principles, and we built it around the acrostic OATS. And it helps you to be able to lead yourself, because you know what your objectives are. You're capable of figuring out your activities, creating your own timetable, but then scheduling them. Now, if you are going to reach other people, you have got to learn the second acrostic, and that acrostic is POL. Plan, organize, lead, and evaluate. And as I indicated to you before, we are going to spend 4 weeks on POL. We'll learn how to plan, how to organize, how to lead, and how to evaluate. And then the last thing is the evaluation of leadership. And, of course, that evaluation has really got to be built, again, around the responsibilities of leadership, and that's to accomplish the objective, maximize the satisfaction of his followers, minimize undesirable side effects, maximize production, minimize expenditure of resources, and the reproduction of future generations of leaders. And those really are the six things that every leader certainly ought to be evaluated on.